welcome to EndNotes. My name is Sheila Broderick. In this programme, we invite people to share their funeral playlist and their thoughts about death, dying, ritual and the afterlife if they believe in one. My guest today is Orla Murphy. Orla was born and grew up in Cork. Home was with her mother, who was a teacher of art, and her father a sculptor. So unsurprisingly, I guess, Orla became a writer, her sister a designer, and her brother a painter and musician. Orla studied music and English in UCC before she began work in TCD Old Library as a conservator of books and manuscripts. She moved to West Cork and continued freelance bookbinding for approximately 20 years. She's married to Ted O'Driscoll, a boat builder and joiner, and they have one daughter, Leaden. Orla is very involved in local events. She's a founder member of the Baltimore Women's Group. She was the editor for the first 5 years of the Baltimore newsletter. Somewhere along the line, she started to write, and her work includes short stories, novels, plays, poetry, and memoir. She enjoys singing and is a member of two choirs, Baltimore Community Choir and the West Cork Choral Singers. She loves reading and especially discussions in her reading group and is a keen cinephile. Since 2011, she's a volunteer for the National Biodiversity Recorders Programme. A busy woman. Welcome, Orla.
Thank you.
Orla, tell me, did you find it difficult to prepare for this programme?
I found it extremely difficult. I haven't really thought about my own funeral, and I suppose many people have a kind of wish list of lovely music, but I didn't associate it with that event. And so it really put it up to me and made me think about how, you know, events that mattered or things that mattered in my life, how they could then be represented somehow in my choices. It was very difficult.
And is death something that you talk about among your family at home, or is it something that doesn't come up?
We have had to talk about it because my mother died fairly recently, 2 years ago, and that has really kind of opened up all kinds of discussions, and not necessarily about death, but we worked quite hard as a rather cranky trio of siblings. We worked quite hard to try and give her a funeral that would reflect her style. And I think of all the things we did, that probably is the one that actually did work quite well, you know.
And can you tell us a little bit about how that funeral ritual unfolded?
Yes, there was a discussion about whether there would be burial or what would we do. And there was some worry that the grave might not have had space. She wanted to be buried with her father, who was a sculptor himself, sculptor and a painter, Joseph Higgins. And he died when she was about six, and he was 40. He got TB. That was the way in those days, I suppose. But he died. And so she maintained always, I think, a very great silence about him and certainly about her own death. But one day when I asked her if she'd like to go out for a drive somewhere, this is when she was, I suppose, about in her late 70s, she said, "Well, would we go and look at her father's grave, which is in the most beautiful place overlooking the River Lee?" There's a cemetery up there, way, way high up overlooking the Lee. And there's a nice sunny corner, I should say, where his grave is and several other members of the family. And so we thought, well, why don't we go for cremation? And so we had a cremation down at Ringaskiddy at Rock Island. And I don't know if you've ever been there, but the formation of the rocks, like the British Navy, I think, blasted out an underground storage for explosives. But they made a beautiful, almost cathedral-like shape from the rock, and beautifully lined with a very delicate coloured brick. And the whole place just seemed very appropriate for somebody who was not at all religious, but had a very strong personality and strong feeling for art and architecture and all of that. And so my brother, who was a musician, invited various musicians to come and play. And that was something that meant a great deal to her, because when he, my brother, was born, he was the youngest in the family, she suddenly, when he was a year old, took off and started going to Flahanachol. And she formed all these friendships with musicians, and they used to come back, and there used to be sessions in the family house, just purely out of, I don't know, some form of instinct that she had that she would start something new or revive some interest. So the choice of music and the performers and the whole atmosphere of that, there was, I think, Micheál Ray's son, he's a piper, and there were other friends of my brother Colm who plays the baron, and they put together just a lovely, gentle, but very appropriate and moving addition to the various speakers that there were. We had her sister, who is, I'm glad to say, still alive, Sister Eta Higgins, and one of her colleagues read a piece from John's Gospel, and then John A. Murphy had his own gospel and he stood up and he said she was mulier fortis, which we all agreed upon. She certainly was a strong woman. And Mary Leland, the writer, made a lovely and very lively roundup to that. I think she was one of the people who kept up a friendship with my mother after, you see, our father died in 1975 and she lived on until 2014, so that's a very long time that she was, that she had lost a great deal of the kind of marvellous social life that they had, a wonderful social life in Cork, mainly involving talk, you know, but it was great. And then the poet Eleáin Ó Coileánán gave her memories of our mother as well. So there was this wonderful variety of people who, you know, they brought her alive and gave us something permanent and a very appropriate and stylish send-off.
She would have been happy to be there herself.
Yes, she would have been very happy to be there herself, yes.
Very good. So can you tell me a little bit about your own first choice for your own funeral playlist?
Well, my own first choice comes from my mother's funeral and it is An Páistín Fionn, sung by Ciarán Ó Galván. Now, I had never heard of him, I'm ashamed to say, but he is a member of Danú, and it is recorded by Danú, and I think that's the recording we're going to use because there isn't a recording of him singing it completely unaccompanied. And this An Páistín Fionn, which sounds partly like a lullaby, partly like a love song, he delivered it in a way that was very measured and very graceful, and he has a beautiful voice, and he comes, I think, from the Ring Gaeltacht, and my mother, after her father died, spent a year, I think, in the boarding school at Ring, so there's that little connection as well. And I don't know if she ever heard him, he's quite a young man, but I think he absolutely stunned the large crowd who were there, which would have included a lot of people who had either little or no Irish. And it was interesting to see the expressions on the faces of the children, to know that a man could stand up and deliver something so elegantly and so powerfully, you know, with such grace. I've very seldom heard a live performance, and that goes right across classical music and all the other musics that I enjoy. I would put him right up there with the best of them.
What a wonderful piece of music to have at your mother's funeral and your funeral. Had you given any thought to where your funeral might happen or things that might take place?
I hadn't, but I suppose really it probably would have to be a cremation, because definitely a little scattering on the water would be a lovely thing, I think. And we're so near Lough Inne, I'm sure it'll be banned from happening at Lough Inne, but you won't tell anybody, you know, middle of the night and a few ashes turfed into Lough Inne. And the best one of those that I was at actually was a lovely person called Caroline Dare. Don't know if anybody remembers Caroline, but she was a member of the West Cork and Barrow Women's Network, which we were in for several years. And when her ashes were scattered, they were scattered off the end of Sheep's Head, which is where she lived. And as the ashes went down into the water in January, we were all absolutely perished, a circle of dolphins rose and made a little dance around the area. And it just seemed the most extraordinary thing. So definitely, I think a bit of scattering on, you know, I don't care whether I'm burnt or buried, really, but turfed into the water would be nice.
Yeah. Great. And can you introduce your next song?
Well, the next song, I suppose, really, it came to mind because of listening to Ciarán Ó Gualbhán again, and that is Kathleen Maud, beautiful singer from the west of Ireland, who I fear rather that in the massive outburst, which is wonderful, of music everywhere and all the recordings, that other voices are not heard as much as they should be. I sound rather prescriptive here now, don't I? I'm sure people who knew her and who remember all of this will listen to her a lot. Kathleen Maud is from Galway. She was a poet, she was an activist, and she was a singer whose voice is completely magical. And so I would like to hear her sing the great Connacht love song, Donal Óg.
Side one begins with Donal Óg, the dramatic effect of the transition from singing to speaking is breathtaking. The choice of where to change, unerring. The singer becomes the poet, the poet the singer.
Agus ní fuí choran le né na nivai, agus ní fuí nair de tans na cricé, ach fuí ma stóirí na tá fuí na munae. Та махрися проти пришти, марвях ля кайри руах таришки, марвях кротол кро решем ришти.
There has been some controversy about cremation, Orla, recently in relation to religion. Does the fact that you have chosen cremation mean that you don't have any religious beliefs or that you don't believe in an afterlife?
No, it doesn't. And I suppose I'm unable to make up my mind. I find that an awful lot really of my thinking seems to go towards the afterlife rather than death, and the idea that somehow one can make a decision seems to be just amazing. And yet it would be very nice to have the reassurance of knowing that there was some form of continuity. All right, but what? I don't know. And I don't know, really, having been sort of born or baptized Catholic, but brought up in a household where my mother didn't practice, my father went to Mass and was very, I think he was in an uncomplicated form of religious belief. And I'd rather leave it at that, not make too much complication about whether I believe. But I love all the paraphernalia, you see, when I think of the art and the music and the painting and the buildings. And I think, where would we be if we didn't have something to generate that? Cremation doesn't mean that I'm not a believer. Definitely not, no.
And does it mean that you anticipate you will be buried in a church service?
Do you know, I can probably see it going that way because the whole ritual is so beautiful and so consoling. And the last funeral I was at of a friend was a school friend who was younger than me, a musician, and she died there earlier this year. But there was no ceremony at all. And we stood on the bare hillside, a sort of scorched new graveyard with the kind of graves that they'll be able to mow over, do you know? It'll be handy and convenient. And it seemed terribly sad. There was no consolation to be offered to a really grief-stricken group of people, including her mother, who was there in a wheelchair, aged 97.
Can you tell me if your next song choice would be acceptable for a church service?
Well, things have changed a lot, and so I think it probably would. It is Foi Deus, by Amália Rodrigues, who is the great Portuguese fado singer, fado, the traditional music of Portugal. And she has a fantastic voice. And I don't understand Portuguese, so I looked up the words, and I think it means it comes from God. And this song, which I then did look up the translation of, lists all the wonders that come from God. So I should think this would be very appropriate, actually, and even to people who don't have any specific religious feelings or affinity. It's such a wonderful tribute to some creative engine.
Saying there that organized religion and the resources available to an organized religion provide, you know, solace at the time of death. You're a writer, and I'm wondering, do you think that literature provides consolation, or have you dealt with death as a theme in your own writing?
Literature providing consolation. Well, when I was in school, I remember our principal, who was Kathleen Cahill, she used to read out the Gospels, and you could tell from the way she was reading them that she thought they were the most marvellous poetry. Now, I think she believed all right, but it was the beauty of the language of John's Gospel, which she really brought across to us, you know. And in my own writing, it's a very interesting question because I didn't think I had themes, but then Mary Morrissey, the writer, was asked if she had themes in her work and was quite surprised to find that indeed she had. So I started to look back through things that I have written, and I find that the subject of death comes up quite often, and I wasn't really working towards it. It's more just that, yes, it's sort of somewhere there the whole time. Not always, but yes, I would say definitely that that I seem to have, I don't know whether it was that my mother's father died when she was so young, and that meant a huge gap in her life. And then more recently, of course, when my mother died, that brought back my father, recollections of him. I hadn't forgotten him. But now that they're both gone, it's extraordinary how much I think about him as well as about her, you know. So, yes, the question of death is something that is, it's a presence, but I don't work deliberately towards it. He was, you know, he was a sculptor, and his bread and butter work was tombstones. And this meant that the whole question of what's appropriate as an inscription, and you could see him as an artist making very ordinary work into works of art by a process of thinking carefully about what the person wanted, what the people, the family wanted, what was appropriate, what was impossible, materials, decorative work, all of that. I think, yeah, he just, it brought before us as a normal part of life that death and the marking of the passing of a person was something extraordinary, even though it's so common. It happens, doesn't it? Yeah.
To all of us.
To all of us, yes. Yeah.
And your next song choice, please.
Well, my next song choice really comes in very appropriately here, I think. It's the Tuba Mirum from Mozart's Requiem. Now, the West Cork choral singers, under their conductor, Diana Llewellyn, performed the Mozart Requiem there last year in Skibbereen in Abbeystrewy Church. And this wonderful, it's a quartet, but it begins with a trombone, which is supposed to be the last post calling people, calling the dead up on the last day, the Tuba Mirum. That's played by the trombone, and then the bass comes in. And if you could have seen the looks on the audience or the assistants at the church there when Rob Kennedy, a great bass singer who unusually, I think, in Ireland has a true bass voice, and he sang out and good and loud and beautifully, and everybody sat up. And I do think that it is a way in which art and artistic wonder bring maybe the reality of afterlife or the possibility of death before us. Unfortunately, don't have him, but we have Walter Berry, great Austrian bass baritone, marvellous singer, and you can get it on YouTube. And the whole performance is actually embedded in the Requiem Mass for Mozart. I think it was in 2002, and it was in Vienna in St. Peter's Church. And so you get the solemn mass with all the, you know, incense and all the wonderful garb, and then you have the music, and you have more time to absorb each because of the gaps where the ceremony continues, and then you have a wonderful piece of music, and it brings it all to a totally other level. So if I can please have Rob Kennedy singing this. It is in fact a quartet, and the other singers on this recording are Peter Schreier, Gundel Janowitz, and Christel Ludwig. Absolute magic.
Thank you.
You were talking there about your dad, Seamus Murphy, Orla, and how you used to play as a child in his studio and his yard among all the monumental works. So even as a child, you must have had an awareness of creating legacies and the way in which art can endure. In your own writing, have you addressed this? And have you had any thoughts about how your legacy might be continued?
I haven't actually, to be honest, any thoughts about it. But, you know, every time you attempt to write something, surely it is something that is to extend beyond yourself. So in a sense, I suppose, yes, I have to be, it would be more honest to say, yes, I would certainly like something to survive of my own work. For instance, there's a poem that arose from an outing that I had with my father where he was erecting a tombstone in a beautiful country churchyard. And this is when I was very small, but somehow, and this is the great thing, I suppose, about getting older and about trying to write, is that things stay with you and they keep rising to the surface. And that was an event which I then wrote a poem trying to describe how a child sees the business of the marking of the stone and the engraving and the names of the people on the stone. And I suppose you could say, yes, slightly latching on to my father, it was something that was inspired by his work. And it was published in Cyphers, which is the longest running poetry magazine in Ireland. And it is a work over which I feel I could stand and say, yes, it was, I hope, worthy of its subject.
And what is the title of the poem?
It's called Sestina. Sometimes when I'm stuck and can't get going, I try to give myself an exercise by choosing an existing form. And the Sestina is a form of poem which is composed of six verses of six lines followed by a triplet, but each of the six verses has a word at the end of every line, the same words at the end of every line, but you have to vary the lines according to strict rules. And it's tough. If anything comes out of it other than an exercise, you're lucky. So this was my go at the well-known form, the Sestina. The father carves a comma on the dark slate grave near the watching child, who makes a full stop in the soil with a twig, a small O near the stone. The child feels the stone, blows hot breath into the comma, and scratches with the twig to scatter dust from the grave, while midday sun makes a full stop on the spire above father and child. Father hands food to the child, who eats, sitting on the curbstone, and drops crumbs on the full stop, the words, the pencilled cross and comma in the blueprint drawing of the grave. Father picks up the twig, points at the words with the twig. See, he says to the child, your grandparents' grave, their names deep in the stone, joined by the comma, ended by the full stop. The child touches the full stop with the budding ash twig, strokes the curve of the comma. Comet, thinks the child, pressing an ear to the stone to hear the soft engine of the grave. Father cleans the grave, pours water on the full stop, floods the names on the stone, makes a pond for the twig, while the staring child holds his breath for the comma. The child sets the twig to grow on the grave before the stone, so its leaves may sweep away the full stop and lift the comma.
You've fitted a lot into a busy life, Orla. Are there any regrets?
Yes, there are regrets, definitely. I suppose all the things that I'd like to have been that I probably wasn't fitted for at all. And I regret that I didn't have more courage. I really admire the people now who get up out of school and they go off to Africa or some other part of, well, Africa is what I'm thinking of, where they learn really about how life is for most people. I certainly regret that, yes.
And anything to celebrate?
Celebration. I think I was very, very lucky in growing up in a household where the parents, who didn't have two pennies to rub together, still had a very marvellous life. And they really believed that the arts were of primary importance, not just some additional frill, you know. And I certainly believe that so much of what is human can be expressed through the arts, and one can get so much understanding, or one can look for understanding through the medium of the arts.
And so your next song choice is?
Well, my next song choice doesn't seem to have any connection at all, but I do believe in the arts, creating joy. And we had a teacher in first year in school, Scolwyr in Cork, Maeve Binchy, for a year, and she was absolutely wonderful. She used to go off on the train to Dublin and bring back sticks of rock, and she would go to the rugby matches, what she meant. And subsequently, it turned out that she absolutely hated Cork and couldn't bear her time there. We thought she was great. And so she taught us music and French. And for French, she would bring in the wind-up gramophone and play Edith Piaf singing Milord. And we all sang along at the tops of our voices.
Il fait si froid dehors, ici c'est confortable, laissez-vous faire milord, et prenez bien vos aises, vos peines sur mon cœur, et vos pieds sur une chaise. Je vous connais, milord, vous ne m'avez jamais vu, je ne suis qu'une fille du port, une ombre de la rue. Pourtant, je vous ai frôlé quand vous passiez hier. Vous n'étiez pas peu fière, dame, le ciel vous comblait. Votre foulard de soie flottant sur vos épaules, vous aviez le beau rôle, on aurait dit le roi. Vous marchiez en vainqueur au bras d'une demoiselle. Mon Dieu, qu'elle était belle, j'en ai froid dans le cœur. Allez, venez, milord, vous asseoir à ma table. Il fait si froid dehors, ici c'est confortable. Laissez-vous faire, milord, et prenez bien vos aises, vos peines sur mon cœur. Et vos pieds sur une chaise, je vous connais, milord, vous ne m'avez jamais vu, je ne suis qu'une fille du port, une ombre de la rue. Dire qu'il suffit parfois qu'il y ait un navire pour que tout se déchire. Quand le navire s'en va, il emmenait avec lui la douce aux yeux si tendres, qui n'a pas su comprendre qu'elle a brisé votre vie. L'amour, ça fait pleurer, comme quoi l'existence, ça vous donne toutes les chances pour les reprendre après. Allez, venez, milord, vous avez l'air d'un môme, laissez-vous faire, milord, venez dans mon royaume. Je soigne les remords, je chante la romance, je chante les milords qui n'ont pas eu de chance. Regardez-moi, milord, vous ne m'avez jamais vu, mais vous pleurez, milord, ça je l'aurais jamais cru. Eh ben voyons, milord, souriez-moi, milord, mieux que ça, un petit effort, voilà c'est ça. Allez riez, milord, allez chanter, milord. Ta da 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 da.
To dying, and is it something that creates fear for you? Are you afraid of dying?
I am certainly afraid of dying, yes. I don't want to think of it as something imminent, and yet, you know, the older one gets and one loses friends and parents and so on, and you have to face the fact that you, indeed you could be next. And yeah, I do have a fear of dying. And my mother used to say that she hoped she wouldn't be there when it happened, you know. And thanks to wonderful modern drugs, she wasn't there when it happened. And indeed, I would wish for anybody listening and for anybody the peaceful slipping away that she enjoyed. You know, even you could use the word discreet, because my brother was present But she waited, I think, until his eyes had just closed for a second, and then she was gone, you know. And as a very private person, I think, who wants to be watched dying? And in my own case, I can't imagine it, but I'm going to have to, aren't I? Yes.
And your next song choice?
Well, my next choice is Elgar's Cello Concerto, played by Jacqueline Dupré and her husband Daniel Barenboim, conducting the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And the reason I've chosen it is not just for the extraordinarily elegiac quality of the music, but because she died very young. And, you know, I'm sure, I'm hoping that she didn't have any regrets, because in her very short life, she absolutely achieved the highest level of artistry and left us all with something that is completely transcendently wonderful.
Orla, do you think about your life and your death in terms of something greater?
Yes, I like that. I really feel that it is part of what sustains us, the whole idea that we are actually part of something much greater than ourselves, and we are lucky to be having, you know, a nice space on this earth and the company of so many wonders, like the wonders of nature and the wonders of friendship and of art as well. And I feel very strongly that we have a responsibility to cherish the natural world, because, not just because, but selfishly, because it sustains us. And that's why I take part in the National Biodiversity Programme, in which is tracking what is happening to the wildlife in Ireland and the effects of global warming. I certainly feel that anything one can do to try to acknowledge and to be grateful for the gift of life, one should do.
And so your next choice remarkably brings wildlife to the fore.
Yes, this is a piece of orchestral music composed by the Finnish composer Rautavaara, and it's called Cantus Arcticus, and it includes recordings of birds, migratory birds like the Hooper swan, other birds like the shore lark. I think the piece we've chosen is the shore lark, a slowed down recording of this little bird. And then Rautavaara wrote a piece which wonderfully, hauntingly accompanies in the most sensitive way the sounds of these creatures which are above us and are around us, and which maybe we don't take enough care of. And this is rather than preaching, which I sound as though I'm preaching, to listen to this music is to be brought to a level beyond either human endeavour or art, indeed, into the world that is there all around us all the time, and maybe beautifully accompanying us even when we don't give it a thought.
Thank you.
Your father died over 40 years ago, which is a remarkably long period of time, Orla. Do you still think about him a lot?
I think about him a great deal. I think about him every day. And since my mother died, and obviously she lived to be 94, Mairead Murphy, Mairead O'Moracú, as she called herself, she, when she went, it somehow brought him much nearer. And I think of both of them every day, not necessarily together, but I give each of them a lot of thought every day. Yeah, yeah. I miss them. I miss him in particular because he was very cheerful. He had bad health. He was always in difficulties about money. And yet he loved his work with great passion. And he had innumerable friends. We had a marvellous house which was open. And literally the door was open and you never know who was going to wander in next. So it was fantastic. Yes, so I think about both of them. I think of them with great gratitude. I resented very much my mother's attempts to keep us corralled, but I think she understood us because I think she was very like us herself. She was very rebellious in her youth. She was very rebellious always. I think she didn't like being, you know, fitted into little boxes. But she too enjoyed her work. She loved teaching. And if you ask about regrets, I do regret that she didn't keep up her artwork because she also had done a course in the Crawford School, and she had a real gift for drawing, and it's a shame that she didn't keep it up, but she didn't seem to think that it mattered, which is rather a pity.
And so, before we end, are there any particular words that you would like to think would be appropriate as an epitaph for a sculptor's daughter?
Sculptor's daughter. An epitaph.
You must have seen a lot of them in your time.
I did, yes. I'd like my thanks to be engraved in the memory of everybody who knew me.
Great, thank you. And your last song choice?
My last choice, this is to send everybody away with a spring in their step, because my father was a very cheerful man. He was a great music lover. And I think he would have loved this piece of music set in Venice by Vivaldi, the Gloria from the piece that Vivaldi was a teacher in. He was a teacher in the La Pietà, where this is recorded. He was there for 30 years, I think, and it was for the orphan girls of La Pietà that he wrote the Gloria. And, you know, for orphans, this must have brought them a little joy. And so I'd like to send away all the people at my funeral with a smile on their face. Vivaldi's Gloria.
Thank you, Orla.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Endnotes with me, Sheila Broderick. We're currently recording interviews for this series. If you've views you would like to share about death, dying, funerals, the afterlife, and would like to share your own funeral playlist, please do get in touch. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Clonline Radio and on the web at clonlineradio.com, where you can also find podcasts of previous shows. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.